Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. Our guest this week is Andy Levine, President and CEO of the American Seed Trade Association, who joins us to discuss input costs, how tariffs are affecting the seed industry, and the group's recent acquisition of the Biotechnology Innovation Organization's Crop Biotechnology Advocacy Portfolio. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Trump administration released a 13-page plan outlining steps to boost domestic cattle production and beef consumption while lowering retail prices. The plan's action items are intended to induce producers to expand herds while reducing regulatory costs, including reduced overtime fees for USDA inspection of small-scale processors. It also calls for opening up 24 million acres of unused grazing allotments on Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management lands. The announcement comes at the same time the White House has angered producers and many GOP lawmakers with Trump's idea of boosting imports of Argentinian beef. On Wednesday, Trump posted on social media that cattle producers were only doing well because of his tariff policy. In reality, cattle and beef prices have remained relatively high since before he took office because of historically low cattle numbers. The government is still shut down, but the Agriculture Department has decided to distribute commodity program payments, resume farm loan processing, and reopen FSA operations. About two-thirds of FSA employees were furloughed when the government shut down at the beginning of the month. Farmers will be getting their agriculture risk coverage and price loss coverage crop insurance payments that are typically distributed in October. Nearly $2 billion in ARC payments and over half a million in PLC payments are expected to be made this year, according to the University of Missouri's Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. The U.S. ethanol industry is facing a major setback in securing access for year-round E15. The American Petroleum Institute, a powerful organization in the oil lobby, withdrew support for legislation to allow year-round sales of higher blends of the corn-based biofuel throughout the country. API's prior support had been heralded as a breakthrough in relations between big oil in the agriculture sector, which has spent most of the last couple decades in fierce lobbying battles over fuel policy. USDA recently signed an agreement with the Justice Department to protect farmers from high and volatile input costs. We asked Andy Levine, President and CEO of the American Seed Trade Association, how the announcement could affect the seed business.
Well, the Department of Justice has been looking at the seed industry along with other ag input sectors for a number of years, and starting under the first Trump administration, moving through Biden, and now continuing on with the second Trump administration. Really what they're looking to see is, are there any unfair practices there and any antitrust practices of concern? Again, they've been looking at this for about 8 years, Lydia, and we have not seen anything yet. They haven't come out with anything detrimental to the industry. The industry strives to be competitive and provide the America's farmers the highest quality seed possible.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says that seed costs have risen about 18% since 2020. I mean, that's a pretty significant amount.
Yeah, it is. I mean, one of the things that we look at, though, is from the standpoint of seed, we bring new varieties to market every single year. And so we're investing money every year so that farmer has new products. And the secretary chose to look at the nominal value of the seed over that five-year period. If you look at inflation-adjusted seed over 5 years or 10 years, it's flat. Whereas inflation-adjusted for the American dollar, it's about 3.35% a year. And so when we're making the investments we're making, and the farmer's pretty much getting that seed at the same cost every year, that's a pretty good deal. You know, we're partners in this effort with the farmer. And so we believe that the more accurate number to look at is that inflation-adjusted number. And that's what we look at in just about everything in our economy.
And you mentioned those investments that seed industry makes in developing new varieties. Can you kind of detail that R&D pipeline, I mean, the timeline and the cost investments that go into that?
Well, we estimate, a number of universities have estimated that the U.S. seed industry spends about 15% of its revenue on an annual basis in developing new seed technology. And that could be seed treatments, it could be new genetics, it could be biotechnology traits. And so all of that goes back into producing that professionally produced seed every single year for America's farmers. And we look at just a conventional variety, whether it's a grass variety or a vegetable variety or a corn. Just that variety itself takes 8 to 10 years because you have to go through testing and evaluation, you've got to go through multiplication, and then you have to bring it to market. And if you're dealing with a biotechnology product, it's about $115 million in about 15 to 16 years to go through the whole testing and evaluation, integrating the traits into the various varieties, and then bringing it to market. On top of that, you have to go through the regulatory process. And that process is here in the U.S. and then in all of our major markets for grain. And so we have to ensure that those markets will accept the grain with those new traits in it. And so it's a pretty extensive process to bring new products to market.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Seed companies make large investments in developing new varieties. We asked Andy Levine, the president and CEO of the American Seed Trade Association, if he sees a correlation between seed prices and the price farmers are receiving for crops.
Yeah, we don't look at it from that standpoint. The data that we use is the same data that the secretary used from the Economic Research Service at USDA. And so we're not looking at it, and we're not doing any comparisons in the marketplace. And that investment is done on just an annual basis, looking forward. Because we're planting a crop, this year's seed crop for corn will be harvested this fall, right now, will be conditioned, and then it will be brought to the farmer next March or April to be planted. And so we're always planting a crop. Our crop happens to be seed. We have the same vagaries of the environment and Mother Nature, the input costs. We're farmers. Seed companies are truly farmers because you have to plant the seed to grow the crop. Our crop happens to be seed. Those prices don't fluctuate when the market's high or when the market's low because we've got all of those input costs into the process to bring that high quality, professionally produced seed to farmers.
And you know, I want to pivot gears a little bit. Tariffs are also affecting agriculture very broadly right now, but how have you seen those tariffs impact the seed industry and you know, especially in the seed industry where many things are imported or even tested abroad?
Yeah, that's the key thing for us, Lydia, is a lot of our products are tested and moved throughout the world and to ensure that the products will work, whether it's in North Dakota or whether it's in Florida. So you've got a lot wide diversity of environmental standards that are required for that seed to perform. And so how do we make sure that that happens? So we'll be in Chile in the winter here in the U.S. when it's the spring and summer down there, and then we bring the seed back, or we bring the seed to Europe and we bring it back. We estimate that with a tomato seed, it's going to go 5 different places around the world before we condition and process it in California and distribute it to farmers. And so having those tariffs, every time it crosses the border in or out of the U.S., the farmer's likely paying a tariff, especially in today's environment. We know a couple of our companies that have had up to a $300,000 bill on seed just for bringing seed in from places around the world when they've gone to multiply that seed. We can't always multiply or research seed in the U.S., so we have to have that broad spectrum of opportunities throughout the world to do that. And so our companies are estimating we're going to spend several million dollars this year just in bringing seed to America's farmers.
And so naturally, I mean, that cost could be passed along to farmers, right?
Yeah, it's we've been dealing with it for a number of years, and the seed companies have done their best to try to, you know, just suck that up and you know, not pass that on to farmers. But at some point in time, it's going to have to be passed on to farmers, depending on where the seed is produced and what type it is.
And as we wrap up here, I also want to get your thoughts. The American Seed Trade Association announced this week that they would take up the crop biotechnology advocacy portfolio after the Biotechnology Innovation Organization dissolved the Ag and Environment section earlier this year. I want to get your thoughts on, you know, what's the impact of this announcement and why does it remain important to continue advocating in this space?
Yeah. Well, when we look at it, we've always represented, and we say we always represent all crop production types. So conventional, biotech, and organic. You know, our companies choose what products they provide for their farmers, and farmers choose what they're going to produce on their operation. It could be biotech crops, it could be organic crops, conventional crops. So the seed industry provides that high quality genetics for it. We consider biotechnology a breeding method. And so we really are excited about bringing the whole biotech portfolio into ASTA's activities. We have worked side by side with bio over the years. As products have come to market, they have dealt with the regulatory side of it and the international side. We've dealt with more in the field and beyond. We see this now as picking up that regulatory side and the international components, and then also working with the downstream partners, you know, the growers, the grain trade, and the food processors that have interest in biotechnology.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Parker Litterick looks at farm input expense estimates in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Farmers are struggling with another season of low commodity prices, and some producers are blaming their higher production costs on consolidation in the input market. Experts say consolidation isn't the only factor driving up input prices. Ag economists say other drivers of price increases include increased demand and the high cost of building domestic production facilities. This chart shows farm input expense estimates from 2015 to 2025, according to the USDA's Economic Research Service. Fertilizer and fuel both saw a significant spike in 2022 and now check in at around $34 and $16 million, respectively. Meanwhile, seed and pesticides have slipped slightly to about $27 and $21 million in the last year, and electricity remains steady at around $8 million. For AgriPulse, I'm Parker Litterick.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. The Justice Department and USDA recently signed an agreement to protect farmers from high and volatile input costs. We're joined by Jay Vroom with Vroomlay Agriculture and Peter Carstensen with the University of Wisconsin on our panel this week. Jay, we'll begin with you. What do you make of this announcement, and could it really bring down input prices for farmers?
First of all, I would say as farmers and those of us in the ag input sector, we always welcome transparency and engagement with government and on these kinds of subjects, which obviously are sensitive, particularly given the Sherman Antitrust Act. We all want to be careful about exactly how we engage on these topics, but the strength of American agriculture has always been grounded in strong competition, lots of competitors, and clear and transparent markets. So I think we have hope that this will show opportunities, but also how strong competition and innovation has been in this U.S. marketplace for crop inputs.
And Peter, I want to bring you into the conversation. You know, cracking down on competition isn't something new. Former Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack worked on this issue during both the Biden and Obama administrations. You know, what's the difference about when you look at that approach to this administration's approach? What differences do you see?
Well, looks to me like they want to reinvent the wheel. There was an ongoing project, especially with respect to seeds, that was one that was developing the information necessary for a critical review of a variety of contractual terms that arguably, and in the view of many, resulted in higher prices and reduced opportunity for competition in the production distribution of seeds. So, you know, they terminated that project back in July and then discovered that there were serious questions about the price of seeds. And I'm focusing on that in particular because that was emphasized in the press release. Suddenly to restart with a MOU involving only the Justice Department and the USDA, rather than including Federal Trade Commission that has oversight in some of the related areas like pesticides and fertilizer, and ignoring the Patent Office, whose construction of how what is patentable, how it can be patented, is again very, very central to the competitive process.
Former Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack has said that transparency is key to keeping these input prices low for producers. You know, I'm curious, is greater transparency in this space possible, or how could that be possible?
Oh, yes. Many of the contracts that exist are subject to confidentiality requirements. There are significant restrictions on what independent seed companies can do that need to be made, again, much more transparent, much clearer to the general community and to law enforcers in particular. I'm not saying that these contracts are necessarily illegal, but it is important that they be looked at and examined much more thoroughly than they seem to have been.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Farming presents the 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast. In each episode, a successful farming editor has a quick conversation with a farmer, chock full of stories and advice from their area of agriculture. They're interesting, educational, and perfect for your busy schedule. Search for 15 Minutes with a Farmer wherever you download your podcasts.
Welcome back. Many ag inputs operate in a global market. We asked Jay Vroom with Vroomlay Agriculture when tariffs could begin impacting input costs for farmers.
One of the things that I think may have been overlooked in this current moment is the length of some of the supply chains and the fact that tariffs that maybe had started to be imposed in early 2025 may not catch up to the actual retail ag inputs market until 2026, just because of the natural delays and the need to have inventory for that once a year transaction for those inputs. So the other thing is that so many of our inputs aren't just a single ingredient. Certainly that's true with regard to nitrogen fertilizer, that's a single ingredient. But then you think about how many different forms of nitrogen fertilizer do I even use on my farms in Illinois? And it's four or five in a normal course of 2 or 3 year period. So, and then it gets even more complicated with crop protection products. Seeds also have lots of different inputs and different kinds of licensing impacts with regard to the constituents that might be in that genetic profile. And then you add seed coatings and seed treatments on top of that, and all of a sudden, the factors around things that may have been in inventory for a year or two that aren't touched by tariffs, and all of a sudden in next year's supply we have tariff impacts, can be quite a jolt.
Very interesting. So a longer term thinking when we look at the tariff impacts.
Absolutely.
There. And Jay, there's kind of a rhetoric. Some farmers are blaming industry consolidation for the high input prices right now. I mean, do you think that this is a valid argument?
Certainly it's a factor to be part of the conversation. I think it's not correct just to say that consolidation has the potential for increasing costs. In a lot of cases, consolidation means the suppliers have greater scale and can actually bring costs down. That certainly was the conversation around some of the consolidation reviews that were undertaken by Congress and the federal government in the crop protection and seed sector back in the late 2018, 2019, 2020 period. So I think it can cut both ways. And at the end of the day, if we have enough transparency and enough competitors, I think we as farmers ought to feel assured that along with government oversight, that we will get a good deal.
Peter, I want to get your thoughts as well. I mean, can industry consolidation be blamed for these input prices? It's interesting, you know, sometimes these prices will go up with the price of crops, but they don't always come back down on the other side when crop prices go back down.
It's important to remember that the objective of business is to make a profit, not to conduct a charitable operation for farmers. So as you get a concentrated industry that in some way may reduce its production costs, that does not in any way guarantee that they're going to share any of those cost savings with their customers if they don't have to, and that directly implicates the number of competitors in the market. I do want to acknowledge we've had an extraordinary improvement in a whole variety of seeds, of plants, corn, soybeans, cotton, etc. This is really significant. It did not require, does not require, the level of concentration that we have in these industries. And I'm particularly concerned about the ways in which patent law is being used to frustrate innovation, developing new, improved varieties based on the new technologies.
The other side of the truth is that certainly here in the United States, we are seeing longer and longer approval times required to get licensing approval from US EPA for new pesticide and crop protection technology that has eroded patent life. And so that's cut the other way, very much so. And that's true in a lot of other developed markets around the world. So again, we as farmers need to be aware of all these dynamics.
We'll be back with more newsmakers. But first, Parker Litterick looks at state SNAP purchasing restrictions. And this week's Map It Out.
A growing number of states are requesting approval from USDA to restrict purchases of soft drinks, candy, and desserts through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. So far, the Agriculture Department has approved a dozen waivers, and four states are still waiting for final approval. Current proposals vary significantly, both in complexity and in types of products covered. This map shows a number of states looking to ban the purchase of soft drinks using SNAP benefits. There is variation between states. For example, Oklahoma looks to ban naturally or artificially sweetened beverages, including flavored water. Louisiana is cutting carbonated beverages but exempts flavored carbonated water. States including Indiana and Idaho want to ban candy from SNAP eligibility as well as soft drinks. Both states have different restrictions, with Indiana's covering most varieties and Idaho exempting all candy containing flour. This means that SNAP recipients could use their benefits to purchase a Twix bar in one state, but could be barred from doing so in another. Florida is the only approved state as of now that's seeking to ban prepared desserts from SNAP purchases. Florida defines prepared desserts as shelf-stable, ready-to-eat, pre-packaged sweet food. Brandon Lipps, administrator of the USDA Food and Nutrition Service during Trump's first term, told AgriPulse that the convergence of the Make America Healthy Again movement with the nutritional interests of Democrats is helping drive these restrictions forward with bipartisan support. For AgriPulse, I'm Parker Litterick.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Check out our full lineup of Successful Farming podcasts. The Successful Farming podcast goes in-depth into the topics that affect farmers and ranchers. The 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast offers a quick conversation between an editor and a farmer. The SF Shorts podcast offers bite-sized interviews about agricultural topics. And the SF Daily podcast covers commodity markets, weather, and the big things happening in agriculture each morning. Search for Successful Farming wherever you download your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. The government remains partially shut down, but the Senate Judiciary Committee has scheduled a hearing Tuesday on competition in the seed and fertilizer industries. Tune into Newsmakers next week and check our website anytime for the latest developments on all things food, farm, and fuel policy. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.